What is up, sports fans? Welcome to Sports Odds and Ends, the show for the fly-by-night sports fan. I'm King Kaz, joined as always by the man, the myth, the legend, the one, the great, JVZ.
Thank you. It's good to be here. I appreciate all the listeners being here and taking time off from playing Untitled Goose Game.
I heard a lot about the Goose Game. I unfortunately am lock battle with our good friend from the other half, DKG Curly himself, where I need three of the Browns players to at least get 30 points.
Oh, that's going to be rough because this 49ers defense is actually pretty good.
Yep.
I've been pleasantly happy with them.
I don't think Odell Beckham Jr., a once proud Giant, now third string choice on the Browns for throwing the ball to, has seen a ball in a century. I'm going to say in a century, in that much time.
And one interesting thing that I kind of saw on Twitter, it was just a joke, but it's basically the idea that, like, if you talk shit about Baker Mayfield, the Browns quarterback, if you talk shit about him, he's going to come out the next week and he's going to have a monster game. Say nothing about him, he's going to come out and play like trash. So I think me saying that right now means next week anybody who has Baker Mayfield should start him. But, you know, I don't know if this will get to him. That's kind of been the pattern. Like, nobody, the concept of bulletin board material in sports, like, nobody thrives on that more than Baker Mayfield. But conversely, nobody, if he doesn't have that, then he's got no motivation whatsoever.
That sucks for me. So let's move on to things that I could probably be a little bit happier about. All right, so we got our roundup. We're going to start with the MLB. It is October, so that means it is playoff time for the nation's game, baseball. I'm going to run really quickly through the playoff brackets that VZ has so kindly put together for us. So we have Astros, Rays. That series is 2-1. Braves, Cardinals, locked in a 2-2 battle. Dodgers and Nationals, and that Nationals team actually looks relatively well, which does not bode well for me in the town that I live in, because if the Nationals do well, it will be a heated battle of the people from DC and the Orioles fans who have to try to defend their shitty year. But the Nationals,
it was a really shitty year.
Yeah, the Dodgers, the Nationals, 2-1 in that series. And then my team, the Yankees, are battling out with the Twins up 2-0.
Yeah, so two of those games are going on right now. The Nationals are up 6-1, and so it looks like they'll tie up the series at 2-2. These series are best of five, so whoever wins three games first gets to move on to the championship series, or essentially the semifinals of baseball. It's looking, it's at least looking competitive for, for this first round of the playoffs. And, us being in the playoffs means that the official 162 game baseball season is over. One thing that a lot of people noted this year, but has now been official, is the absolutely massive home run surge this season. So we've kind of talked about this in terms of, like, the Orioles and like how many home runs they've given up, but it's not just an Orioles thing. It's across the board. Teams are giving up a lot of home runs. Teams are hitting a lot of home runs. There's a nice SB Nation article from their Dorktown series run by John Boyce,
Praise be.
Yeah, praise be. He's got this broken down very nicely in terms of just how far across the board this home run craze is. It's not just home runs. It's home runs allowed, home runs given up, home. Number of games this year where teams have hit five or more home runs, just you know, this year it's just way more, and all this is spelled out in charts. Home runs in the first inning, home runs in the second inning, home runs in the third inning, like you know, all the way to the ninth inning. Like, if you break it down that way, this year is still on top in every inning. Home runs hit by position, but like the position player that's batting, every position except for first base has set a record for home runs hit this year. By month, it's just everything across the board. So you know, yeah, the balls are juiced, and we're seeing the effects of it. And nowhere is it more clear than all of these charts.
Weirdly enough, like just like kind of random stats, like the home runs are exponentially up, but the overall batting average isn't crazy high, you know? Yeah. Which I don't know then what to attest it to. I don't know if it's bad pitching or just really good spot hitting in that situation where it's like
JVZ.
Yes.
For the folks at home, for the listeners out there, when you say the balls are juiced, explain that. Explain that. What we're seeing people say that the balls are juiced. That's the narrative with this surge in home runs in 2019 and in recent years. But there's also a surge of high level pitchers. So when you say the balls are juiced, explain what that means.
First of all, I don't want to say that that's the only factor, but I know the way I said it kind of implies that it is. But when I say the balls are juiced, I mean the material used to make the balls is slightly different. It's designed to have the ball carry more momentum. And I think there's supposed to be less drag on the balls as well. So just the way the ball is made is a little bit different now compared to the way it used to be made. And I think that's had a noticeable effect. So that's what I mean when the balls are juiced, they'll fly a little bit further. But there are plenty of other factors as to why we're seeing more home runs. And part of that is just a greater emphasis on things like launch angle when trying to swing at the ball. And that kind of emphasis encourages more fly balls, more home runs, more hitting over the infield, so that when the infield does things like the infield shift, you don't end up hitting ground balls into it. So now it's just don't hit ground ball at all. Instead of trying to aim for where the hole is, it's just hit over the infield if they try to move around and try to position themselves where they think you're going to hit. Just try to hit over them. We're seeing a lot of strikeouts. We're seeing a lot of we're seeing batting average kind of stay the same, like Kaz said, but we're still seeing a lot more home runs, and like we haven't set a record for runs scored or runs given up. But home runs are up, and the ball is leaving the park a lot more. And I think part of it also is a little bit of like the garbage time tendency for teams to kind of throw out the position player to pitch at the end of games. When the game's already like 12-0 or so, then it's like, okay, let's just put anybody out there to pitch instead of risking a pitcher and risking an injury because the game's out of reach. But at this point, you know, you put them out there when it's 12-0 and then the game ends up 18-0 after that because a couple more players hit home runs. So I think that's kind of why we're seeing the surge of like the 5 home run games. So.
Like I'm kind of doing a little bit of homework on the fly by looking at this year by year batting average totals, and kind of two of the things that stand out to me, looking at these numbers and trying to make sense of this is one of the things you just said is we are seeing a lot more strikeouts, right? So this year there's a kind of an average of 8.81 strikeouts like per batter, and it's over as an average, and that's a really, and it's a just a number that has kind of gone up, which would speak to better pitching year over year, but the slugging percentage took almost like a 20 something point bump from last year, from 409 to 435, which is kind of alluding to the amount of home runs, amount of more home runs we're seeing, because we're not seeing more people on base in like a kind of this average. We're just seeing literally just more home runs.
Yeah, or at least because just hitting further into the outfield kind of contributes to slugging mm-hmm. percentage, because you know when you hit towards like the corners and stuff, that's where you get doubles and triples.
Yeah,
and that'll contribute to slugging. It's not like these guys are getting better at hitting, but they're swinging for the fences more, essentially.
Yeah, it's always kind of fun to get into the numbers with baseball sometimes, so it's kind of always a fun thing. So definitely go check out this SB Nation article from John Boyce and the boys over at Dorktown. It's really, really good. But we're going to go on to some NFL stuff. What do we got in the NFL roundup, VZ?
Vontaze Burfict has been suspended for the season. Maybe this might be his second time, or maybe his first time getting suspended for the season. But this is like the 12th time that he's been penalized for an illegal helmet to helmet hit.
I saw this one the other day. It was definitely so he kind of launched himself at another player. The NFL has been trying in its infinite wisdom to be to up the punishments on those very aggressive helmet to helmet hits. And this kind of is the first person this season that I think has been hit this hard with a suspension. Been some fines and things like that, I think.
Yeah, and this, I believe this is a record level suspension. It's almost kind of he's the kind of player that would be like suspended over and over again until he's out of the league. Because this is a chronic serial thing with him. Like it's just a cycle on Twitter. Like every time, like, you know, Vontaze Burfict targeted another player and hit him with a helmet to helmet hit. And you know, why is this guy still in the league? Like this guy should be, you know, suspended until he's gone. And so I think they've kind of finally hit him with the year long suspension. You know, he spent so many years with the Bengals, and he kind of kept getting dinged over and over again. And then the Raiders signed him, and I think they made him a captain too. I could be wrong about that, but he was one of the apparently one of the voices of reason in the whole Antonio Brown saga. Sorry to bring his name up again, but he's kind of a menace on the field and a very unsafe player. And
for me, one of kind of the big things that has kind of shown, like, it's going to take a while before the culture of this changes, is this guy got suspended and he's on the sideline. And if you're watching that game, there are so many people kind of like praising him on his team. And I kind of understand in that sense of like team camaraderie. But there's also that, like, it also makes you think and see that culture of telling people to do this on purpose kind of thing. Right. Where it's like, yeah, in that moment you did something, but then you get all this praise and admiration from the people around you, which makes you, in a sense, start to feel like the thing you you did wasn't actually that bad. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah, it makes them feel like a martyr in a way.
Yeah. And I think those are the cultural parts of it that need to change.
Yeah. But, and hopefully when it's like you get a suspension and then at that point you're hurting your team and with perfect, like for a lot of other players that are, you know, active or you, maybe you could say rough. Sometimes there's a little bit of like a gray area of like, okay, is this guy trying to be violent or is he just, like he's just a very intense player and the rules have changed to the point where a player of his level of intensity can no longer or has to adjust the way they play. And then and usually with those guys, usually they find a way to adjust the way they play. And I feel like Perfect is not on that level. He is always been this kind of violent level player. A player that is a danger to other players, and it's just taken a long time for the league to adjust to that, adjust to the fact that he's not going to change and ramp up these penalties, and so hopefully this year long suspension either gets him to change or gets teams to question whether it's worth signing a guy like him.
Mm-hmm. All right. DJM, mark it on the board. We have our first firing. The Washington Redskins have decided to part ways with head coach Jay Gruden after a kind of abysmal start to their season. They were kind of expecting to have a better season, but as DJM just noted here for us, they started 0-5, and that is no way to start a season.
They are being mentioned in the same circles as the Miami Dolphins of this season, yeah. And you don't want to be in that conversation.
So here's this key difference, right? Here's a very drastic difference for fly-by-night sports fans when you're trying to understand something, right? The Miami Dolphins are doing this in this current iteration on purpose. They are losing on purpose in a certain light. Whereas the Washington Redskins came into this season with hope of doing things. And have started 0-5. So there is that very drastic difference where you thought you put a good team together and you're not able to do those things. And then the blame game starts. It unfortunately has caught Jay Gruden. But if they continue to spiral, there will be other people who are let go. There will be positional changes. It'll start to slide into a scale of blame games until there is no one else left to blame.
Yeah, it's, I mean, you could argue that Jay Gruden is just the latest casualty of this whole Washington mess. This is not the first time we've talked about them and their front office woes or about their owner, Daniel Snyder, and his shenanigans. I don't know how long it's been. It might have been since the Kirk Cousins era that they made the playoffs, the Kirk Cousins / RG3 fiasco. And then all of that was mishandled. It's been a mess since then. It'll probably continue to be a mess. They fired Jay Gruden by calling him into the office at 5 a.m. this morning and then firing him. So I saw a quote in one of the discords that, like, if you can fire somebody at 5 a.m., you can fire them at 10 a.m. He didn't need to call the guy in that early to do that to him.
Yeah.
It's already rough enough. But DJM says he'll be in Oakland before Thanksgiving because his brother John Gruden is coaching the Raiders. So he might have a place to fall back on. Especially since Gruden's got a 10-year contract, so he can kind of do whatever he wants.
Yeah, that's a whole other thing. I don't know if I want to get into, but offensive line coach Bill Callahan will be taking over the reins as interim head coach.
Bill Callahan, former Raiders coach, is that the same Bill Callahan? The guy who replaced John Gruden in Oakland.
Yeah.
Another interesting wrinkle. So
yeah. So he's going to be taking over this article that we're taking this story from over at Deadspin kind of also points out that they have two other really good prospects of people who could be coaches. And they think that
I believe that's a joke. Those guys are not. You're talking about Rob Ryan and Jim Tonsula, and those are not legitimate coaching candidates. but neither really is Bill Callahan. So that's what Washington has to work with right now.
I'm going to throw a name out there that was bandied about here in the Midwest today, here in Big Ten country. There is a guy who is not coaching right now, who might have a special attraction to the Washington football team. Former Ohio State coach Urban Meyer.
I was going to say, is he doing State Farm commercials?
He's on Fox College Saturday.
I don't think any coach to plug in is going to matter.
The only reason I think it was bandied about today here in Big Ten country, the case of Urban Meyer, is because the Washington Redskins have Dwayne Haskins, and who was Dwayne Haskins' coach at Ohio State? Urban Meyer. What do you guys think?
I think, if anything, it won't be during the season. I think it's a situation where if you're Urban Meyer, you don't want to step in to that situation right now. I think you want a kind of fresh start. If you were to step into that situation, I think you let them. I think you let them court you in a sense, and you kind of sit back and maybe you start looking over the roster. Maybe you start looking over free agency and things you can kind of put together, because one of the things about our Urban Meyer is he's going to want to come into a situation and probably put something together that will make him look good, because that's kind of his thing, is he likes to make himself look good. I don't think he's going to want to come into a situation and then be yet another in kind of a slew of college coaches that can't coach in the NFL.
I think when you say a clean slate, I think that should mean Dan Snyder should sell the team, clear out the entire front office, and then like change the name of the team, you know, and into something less racist, and then rebrand, like, you know, start completely new. And then I think then that's a good
apply for the XFL.
Yeah. Or maybe that. And that's a good environment for a new, not just a new coach, but a new general manager to come in and say, okay, I'm going to rebuild this team the way I want to, bring in a coach that I want, that I can work with, and or bring in somebody that does both, although that doesn't usually tend to work out so well. So it's like right now, this is not an attractive job for anybody. It's if you want to add something to your resume job and say that you've done it before, although that doesn't really apply to Bill Callahan, who coached in the NFL before. So it's just not a good situation. And this is not a team that anybody's going to want to sign with. It's a team that you sign with because you want to stay in the NFL, or because you got drafted there and you're unlucky like Dwayne Haskins. Sorry, Dwayne.
All right. Moving on from there, we got a couple of NCAA things to get through pretty quickly here. So Kansas has been charged with multiple level one violations.
These are the serious ones. These are tied to recruitment stuff, and specifically the Kansas basketball team coached by Bill Self. There's also a couple level two violations that are tied to their football program. So this is going to be bad. They're throwing around the words lack of institutional control, which is those are kind of the hallmark words that the NCAA likes to throw around before they hit really hard when it comes to banning teams and from like the playoffs for several years. This could be a big serious thing. We'll just have to wait and see, but for now, Kansas, they don't seem to be doing a great job of trying to make themselves look good in light of these allegations, because they're still throwing massive parties for their basketball program. They kind of have like this thing called Late Night at the Fog, which is like this big preseason celebration where they just a big party night at the gym to kick off the basketball season. And they brought in Snoop Dogg to play, or Midnight Madness, I think is a kind of a common term that schools use. Every school does this. Most schools don't go out and get Snoop Dogg to come perform. You're supposed to be ill an academic institution, and you're supposed to not have much money to throw around.
I almost, to a certain extent, think you could almost, because all right, let's pull the Band-Aid off, right? I don't think the Snoop Dogg part is the worst part. I think the part that got them the most heated part of the attention is Snoop Dogg, as part of this performance, had stripper poles with women dancing on them. And I think that is kind of the thing people most gravitated towards.
And a money gun. This was like an uncensored, like regular Snoop Dogg concert. Which is fine if you're going to a Snoop Dogg concert. But I mean, I think these nights are supposed to be kind of, and not just for students, but these are supposed to be like for the community, family friendly type of, to celebrate the kickoff to the NCAA basketball season. Not a great look when you're facing NCAA sanctions. Not a great look when you are trying to hold a family friendly thing for the community.
I'm sorry. I just have to say this. I'm jumping in a lot, but I have to say this. You invited Snoop Dogg.
Right.
What did you think was going to happen?
No, that's the same thought I had when I saw this all on Twitter and people being, you know, like, oh man, they had to apologize for that Snoop Dogg concert. And then I looked at the clips of it and I'm like, yeah, that looks like a Snoop Dogg concert. What else did you expect to happen at a Snoop Dogg concert?
Like you're lucky he didn't light up. Like,
yeah, that's... I'm sure he did. I just didn't catch that part. But I think it does just kind of roll back into the thing that JVZ said, where when the microscope is on you, you should be doing less shit in general. Like, you just should be doing less. You shouldn't then live in the excess that makes them look at you even harder. Because it just does nothing but make you look guilty. So good on you, Kansas. You're going down in a hellfire. Moving on from there, let's talk about California signing a bill that we have been talking about kind of on the past couple episodes of this show. So this is a bill that allows college athletes in the state of California to make endorsement deals and sponsorship deal. Well, I don't know about sponsorship deals, but endorsement deals.
Sponsorship deals would be included in it. Like that, as we've clarified before, like this is not, they're not getting paid by the schools, but if you want to like shoot a commercial, a local commercial or something, or actually I think one of the best examples was a story that we covered years ago, but about a kicker for UCF that he had a YouTube channel. And he was just talking about like his workouts and stuff, and his channel got popular. And but because he was talking about athletic stuff on the YouTube channel and he was making money off the YouTube channel, he had to the NCAA told him he's got to take the channel down, and he refused and he lost his scholarship because of it. You know, so this is like an enterprising young player, you know, trying like he wasn't making that much money off of it, but you know, he's getting popular. It's you know, that he wasn't getting paid by the schools like to do this. You know, he did this all on his own, and he went out and made all this money on his own, and now under this law, he would have, had he been playing in California, he would have been able to do this. So, you know, Governor Gavin Newsom signed the bill live on an episode of LeBron's HBO show. It was interesting because the group of people that were in this show on its own is kind of interesting because like LeBron just kind of has people on to just talk and chat about stuff. This is, you know, so like he's had like Lonzo Ball on the show, you know, his teammate with the Lakers, to kind of talk about like his family stuff and how all that goes. So it's pretty interesting. It's called Uninterrupted. This particular group of people on the show, between LeBron, who never played college sports at all, he kind of skipped all that. So he was able to talk about how like he was able to do so much more because he completely skipped the NCAA system, and you know, like he needed the money at the time, so like it was a no-brainer decision for him to go straight to the NBA. You know, and then Rich Paul's agent Diana Taurasi, who played all 4 years, Ed O'Bannon, who sued the NCAA for using his likeness. So like the players can't make endorsement money, but the NCAA can take things that look like them. They can take their jersey numbers and sell them without their names on it. And everybody knows that this is Ed O'Bannon, or everybody knows that, you know, this jersey is Johnny Manziel's Texas A&M jersey. And so like Ed O'Bannon like won the court case for against the NCAA for that. So he was involved in this interview. And Caitlin Ohashi, who is a gymnast for UC Berkeley, who went viral because of one of her routines earlier this year. I think it was like set to a Michael Jackson song or something. And so that went viral, and she couldn't make any money off of that video going viral, because she is an NCAA athlete. So just an interesting cast of characters. Because California is such a big state, and because there's so many NCAA athletes in California currently, so many colleges, you know, 30 million, a population of 30 million people, like, you know, what California does tends to have ripple effects on what the rest of the nation does, because the NCAA can certainly try to threaten that, you know, we're not going to allow California schools to participate in playoff tournaments anymore. But that's a lot of athletes. That's a lot of students that you're trying to fight against. These are a lot of schools with a lot of money. So like there's only so much they can do. And there's already other states that are kind of lining up to try to either pass similar bills. U.S. Representative Anthony Gonzalez from Ohio is trying to propose a national bill under the kind of the idea that like it's going to be weird for a national organization if every state passes a different law.
Yeah. So there's a you have a really good ESPN article that I think everybody should go check out in our show notes. And there's a little blurb here that I think is really interesting in what you just said with Anthony Gonzalez, who is from Ohio and was a Ohio State football player, looking to make a national law that is probably somewhere on par with what this California thing is. But there's this blurb here that says the NCAA has said it recognizes the need to modify its current rules, which prohibit players from accepting any money from outside sources. But they strongly prefer one nationwide rule rather than each state coming up with slightly different variations. And the thing about that, when I read that, I think my mind goes to a really bad place in thinking if a federal bill goes into the work, the NCAA feels like they have a better chance of fighting it rather than every state deciding to make a decision and then having to fight that in every state. Whereas they feel like they could fight it on the national level easier to keep it from happening. Yeah.
What are the incentives against this bill? If something like this is brought to Congress in Washington, what are the cases against it?
I'm putting my devil advocate hat on, and I feel like the NCAA would somehow try to say it would make it unfair to certain players. There would be, you know, a level of disparity because some players in different schooling systems would have the ability to out-earn their teammates or out-earn, you know, other people, and it wouldn't be it would be hard to you know, like not relegate, but police how and the companies that these people, that these student athletes would be doing deals with that could go against.
It sounds, Kaz, like what you're trying to say is that if something like this is passed nationally, there'd really be no way to control what schools do with the money, and as far as getting players to come to their school and paying student athletes. I don't necessarily think that's the case. I don't want to get too deep into the weeds on this one, but I think that there are ways to manage this. You'd have to have an athletic director that understands the school's endowment and is willing to do certain things. If you are a booster at a school and you want certain athletes there, maybe this is part of it. We all know that college boosters are what make athletic programs at universities go. And perhaps that's part of it. Maybe this is all one. I don't think that this would be as big of a complete reformation of the NCAA Division One, Division Two, whatever athletic system as people are assuming that it would be. I think it would just be simply taking something that should already be happening and should be regulated and just putting it on the books. And in that regard, I don't necessarily see a problem. Like, for example, there's this argument saying that the five-star Heisman Trophy candidate quarterback at a national powerhouse school would make less or more money than a golfer that plays for that university. Now that's a debate I think you can get into, whether it's an issue of generating revenue and fairness and revenue sharing across the university. That's a debate I think we can have. But the question of getting paid, I think that one is really only left to be ratified.
Well, especially from the endorsement perspective, because that is a very merit-based thing that, like, if you are the type of player that excels very well to a point where you bring in a lot of money to the school, then you are the type of player that, in a way, quote unquote, deserves to be making some sort of endorsement money. Mm-hmm. If some local sports apparel shop wants to put you in their commercials, then they're not going to do that for the third string golfer. You know, they're not going to do that for somebody who rides the bench on the volleyball team. They are going to want to do that for the quarterback of the national championship football team. So, like, it's,
yeah, and I think that people's earnings potential should be based on them, but I definitely feel somewhere along the line the NCAA will try to find ways to demonize it in some way, shape, or form.
I mean, I absolutely agree, because I mean, the cynical part of me is, like, one of the arguments that they put out there is that, you know, they might agree a little bit that athletes should be able to control, like, how they make a little bit of the money outside. But they always say that, like, they want to make sure that bad actors don't come in and exploit them. But I mean, I would say that the NCAA is one of those bad actors that right now the system is institutionalized exploitation of these athletes. So, you know, all they're really fighting for is their right to exploit these players rather than allowing other people to come in and exploit these players. So it's not a big difference to me, except now the players get a little bit more of a choice, a little bit more options. They can take it upon themselves to research these people. I mean, at this point they are adults. So,
yeah. All right. Let's talk a little bit about the NBA and then move into our big stories of the week. The Bucks got fined for tampering with one of their own players. This is a Deadspin article. And so Jeezy, explain to me how you get fined for tampering with your own player.
You get this because the NCAA, or sorry, because the NBA wrote some dumb rules, or maybe rules that are a little bit too broad. Because in this case, the general manager John Horst of the Bucks basically said that they are willing to give Giannis Antetokounmpo, this past season's MVP, a supermax contract, but it's a couple years before he's allowed to offer that contract. So because they're talking about it a little bit early, that's tampering, even though it's their own player, even though there is almost no chance of some other team trying to get in and offer in a better contract, because they can't offer a better contract. This is one of those examples of the NBA. I think they tried to ramp up this whole tampering thing, and the first thing they managed to catch was a situation that wasn't really tampering. And it's just dumb. And
some other dumb stuff from the NBA. The NBA has made a demand to the teams that they correct all the listed heights for players on their teams.
Yeah, and so this is weird. Like, whatever the players' listed heights were before, like when they announced them at the beginning of the game, like, those were not true. That's just whatever they wanted to say. And a lot of that was dictated by the players wanting to portray themselves a certain way so they don't get played out of position. Kevin Durant is probably the most famous example. Everybody thought Kevin Durant's about 7 feet tall, but he's listed as 6'9", and he did that because he wanted to play small forward. So it turns out he's 6'10". It's not that, it wasn't that much of a difference. So, you know, like a couple players' heights have changed. If you want, you can check out the article to see, but like nobody's like more than plus or minus like 3 inches from where they were previously listed. So it hasn't been that big a deal, but this was predicated on Kings player Buddy Hield. Everybody thought he was actually younger than he was by a year. And so we looked at that and it's like, well, if we got that wrong, then we actually got to like take a look at the numbers that we have and make sure that the rest of them are correct too. So I ended up getting caught in that net. Just minor NBA stuff to go along with a much bigger NBA shitstorm that completely caught me off guard. I don't even know how to approach this story other than to kind of describe what happened. But over the weekend, Rockets GM Daryl Morey tweeted out the words "Fight for freedom, stand with Hong Kong," kind of in support of the protests that are going on in Hong Kong right now. The issue with that is that the NBA has big, massive business deals in China, roughly 500 million Chinese fans watched at least one NBA game last season. So if you compare that with the United States, you know, with a population of roughly 300 million, that is, you know, a major untapped market. There is a lot of money coming in from China. A lot of these companies did not take too well to Maury's words, to the point where Tencent, the company, the media company, who I think is in charge of broadcasting a lot of NBA games, they basically said that like that the Houston Rockets are just dead to them. Like they just don't exist. There are 29 teams in the NBA, not 30.
Yeah. And they've banned like kind of all broadcast coverage of the Rockets and any kind of news that it would involve the Rockets, essentially.
And this is the team that Yao Ming played for. And Yao Ming is now the president of the Chinese Basketball Association. And so for that relationship to break, like this is a big deal. Like this is just a major, like I can't even wrap my head around the extent of this story or where this might go, because this is not just a sports story. This is a big geopolitical story. What happens here might indicate what might happen in other industries as more industries do business with China, and just the massive amount of money and potential money that that people can make from the Chinese market.
I think it's one of those things where it's kind of something that's hard to navigate, especially from afar. I think you kind of see from afar, looking at things, people fighting for freedoms that we take for granted. And you think that is, sometimes people always want to try to be on the right side of history, but they tend to not be on the right side of right now. And I think that's what happened to the Rockets GM, unfortunately, is he did something that would put him on the right side of history, but just not the right side of right now, with the amount of kind of control that the Chinese government has over the corporations that do business in China. It creates a lot of pressure. So you have things like the things you listed about the blackout of the Rockets and news coverage of the Rockets. The Chinese Basketball Association pretty much annexed all exhibition games that they were going to do with the G League. And Nike in that ripple had to pull Rockets merchandise from their Chinese web store, because that is it just is this tiny rock that caused a ripple effect where even players had to apologize for something that they had nothing to do with. James Harden and Russell Westbrook had to make apologies.
Russell Westbrook doesn't apologize for anything. That is a petty, he's a petty guy. And that's how much money is Tillman Fertitta, the Rockets owner, like basically threw his GM under the bus and did the whole the views of expressed by this one person that works for us does not reflect the views of the whole organization. And he even went as far as to say that the Rockets are not a political organization, which is every time somebody says shit like that, like I always scream bullshit, because it's like not choosing not to have a political stance is a political stance.
Yeah. There is at the end of the day, I think something we used to say on this show a lot was follow the money, right? And like you said, with a lot of the money that is coming from China, I could see a situation in where this guy ends up getting fired because of this.
Well,
it's something else, but it'll be because of this.
I mean, there were a couple reports that the Rockets were considering that. I think they're in heavy dispute. I didn't really mention that, but that topic came up that like, could Daryl Morey get fired for this? Daryl Morey is one of the more well-known GMs in the NBA, and he's kind of been on the forefront of the analytics movement. He's also heavily involved in esports as well, but he's pretty well known, and he could have said literally anything else, and then the NBA would talk about like, oh, it's his right to say these things. Adam Silver has kind of said that, but he's also very much towed the line and tried to, like, everybody's like, basically everybody who's worried about the money is really, really apologetic towards the Chinese government now.
There are jobs on the line.
and they're taking a lot of flack for it too from people outside of the NBA. Like politicians are basically saying, like, wow, you just bent over backwards and you just threw Daryl Morey under the bus because you are so afraid of losing out on all this Chinese money. And to be fair, that's a lot of fucking money. So yeah. We talk about like the NFL and the NBA and kind of the differences between how they've approached things. And I think one of the hallmarks of this story here is like we've discovered exactly where the NBA's limit is to how socially how socially active they want to be. Like you can let LeBron go out and say all these things about social justice that are popular in the US, but when it comes time to pick between your American fans and the Chinese money that you might have coming in, the NBA chose the Chinese money on this case. So,
we have talked about both of these big sports franchises, the NFL and the NBA, looking to move more into international sports. And China has kind of been the path that the NBA has chosen. And in doing so, there is a lot of money on that table, whereas the NFL has kind of in a weird way chosen Europe. But that's a whole another discussion for a whole other time. It's kind of trying to stay in pleasing to that business deal. And like DJM just put it, it's kind of for the NBA, it's a general rule, don't poke the bear when it comes to China. And that's kind of their narrative right now is because of the amount of money that is there for them to be made in endorsement deals and all kind of other things. So it's definitely a line that has been drawn and has been drawn drastically for everyone to see. As I said at the beginning of this, not put the NBA on the right side of history.
The NFL's line I think we saw was Colin Kaepernick, and it's mm-hmm. whether you think it's collusion or not, like the we're talking about a serviceable first string quarterback in the NFL. Like Washington should sign him. Like that's, you know, plenty of teams could use a player like Colin Kaepernick right now, but no team wants to risk the money that they might lose if half their fan base gets angry about them signing Colin Kaepernick. And mm-hmm. this case, it's not teams worried about their own fan base. It's league and several teams worried about the money they might lose if they even look like they're coming close to supporting Daryl Morey's right to speak freely about this, albeit very complicated issue. It's just so interesting that over a single weekend, that line got drawn so clearly that, that everybody can see it. And everybody can see that like the NBA positions themselves as being a more progressive, league, but it's, you know, even that has its own limits.
All right, moving on from there, let's talk about a little bit of unfortunate news. Sports Illustrated cuts 35 to 40% of their staff. The layoffs occurred last Thursday, and it is expected that they're going to replace about a percentage of that with contractors.
Yeah, I mean, just basically like non-staff, you know, contract level reporters. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's weird because like Sports Illustrated, I think we grew up with Sports Illustrated being like a kind of a very trusted name in sports mm-hmm. journalism and news. Like ESPN was the one that you saw every day on TV, but like Sports Illustrated was the one that, you know, you get like a monthly magazine, and like it was a magazine level journalism for mm-hmm. For hard hitting sports reporting, and I mean that kind of fell off as the internet age came on, but I mean there were still a lot of good reporters that you could maybe name by name with Sports Illustrated. You know, like Lee Jenkins was one of the ones, like, you know, when it came time for LeBron to make his second decision, you know, he turned to Sports Illustrated's Lee Jenkins to write that article or to at least ghostwrite that article for him. And there's, you know, Michael McCann does a lot of really good articles for talking about sports law and that whole intersection. So like, you know, they still have a lot of really good writers, and a lot of them got laid off this past Thursday. So I'm not even sure, like once you lay off that much talent, I don't know if there's anything, I don't know if there's any coming back from this. Like it's, you know, there's a lot of kind of, I don't want to call them like dead sports organizations, but like names that we used to hear a lot in sports news that are like, now we think of them as clickbait. And so like, to me, like Sports Illustrated is kind of joining those ranks, and it's kind of sad to see an organization that you grew up with turning into something like that. But it's, you know, it's kind of, after being sold from one media group to another over and over again, like this is kind of what that brand has turned into. And that
I think there's also something to say in like a small sense for certain companies and certain brands who sometimes try to live on the name and the brand they created rather than constantly doing things that allow them to evolve. There are a lot of corporations that I think exist by trying to live off of the brand that they created and are no longer like pushing forward in doing things that make people go, oh man, yeah, Sports Illustrated. Because like you said, no, that's what I'm saying. They haven't. So GGM just said, what has Sports Illustrated done to innovate? I think kind of initially it was more the, like DJ, like JVZ just said, it was kind of the quality of their writers. It was building a name, building a brand. I don't think you get to where they got without some intelligence in building brand. But I think a lot of these, like ESPN, even without probably being saved by Disney, kind of just sat on being like, hey, we're ESPN. And I think for newer sports fans, that's not enough. You know, I think you kind of have to grab their attention the same way you kind of grabbed ours when we were younger.
I mean, nobody's going to pay for a Sports Illustrated magazine subscription anymore. You know, I even actively avoid linking to their articles for this show, specifically because you're going to get hit with an autoplay video if you go there. Like that's mm-hmm. that's the kind of website they've turned into. And that sucks. And especially when like you still know a couple names of like some good writers that work there. And so like I'm on Twitter, I'm seeing a lot of like writers that I follow that don't work for Sports Illustrated, but like, you know, they're all still sad about this news, like,
yeah,
because it's like the death of an institute. I mean, they're not dead, like they, but the, it's like you can see the bell, the beginning of the end, and
the bell tolls.
You know, and in like 5 years, like maybe the only thing they'll be known for is the swimsuit issue, and for a once, yeah, it's just sad.
All right, moving on from there, we're going to talk a little bit about some motorsports. Kevin Magnussen was doing really well at the Singapore Grand Prix until an issue started to happen with what they thought was tire wear, which turned out to later be found out it was a sandwich bag.
Yeah, so if, you know, like, I think you and I both love motorsports, partly because it's like, what if engineering was a sport? And like the, you know, so like all the complicated aerodynamics and that are involved. And so like specifically in this case, it's front wing aerodynamics, the front of an F1 car, just that little big flat thing that's in front. It's actually not that flat. It's got like all these ribs in it, but you know, there's all this design work that goes into like what happens if air flows over that. Like, what does it do to the car? What does it do to the downforces? How does it affect the tires? How does it affect the tires long term? How does it wear the tires? There's all kinds of fancy calculations that go into that. Even something as simple as there's a car in front of this car throws all those simulations out of whack, because the air behaves differently. If you take something like a sandwich bag and you shove it into the front wing, that is just a whole nother bag of worms. In fact, like you can quantify that. They lost 4 seconds per lap, and they were just noticing that they lost a bunch of downforce. And because they lost a bunch of downforce, there was a bunch more friction on the tires, and that's what's causing the tire wear. But because it was something that, like, it was a clear plastic sandwich bag, they couldn't see it. And because these cars are moving so fast, like, they can't see it as the car is going past. So they had to bring him in for a pit stop with 3 laps left. And, and each pit stop takes, like, 20 seconds. And, once they brought him in, they were able to see that, there's a sandwich bag stuck in here, and they pulled it out and they put new tires on. He went out there and he recorded the fastest lap of the entire race among all cars, for the second year in a row, actually. But, this year you get to earn points for the fastest lap if you finish in the top 10, and he didn't. He was last, 17th, but there were three cars that had retired at that point. So, yeah, he was rolling around in like eighth place before this sandwich bag incident. And, because of that, he fell all the way to 17th. And it's
one of those things where oddly enough, right? Like you said, it's kind of a engineering at a very high level. And when you kind of have these kind of situations, you think of the through line that you know. So you're like, well, what could he have hit? Like, what is there screws loose? Is there this? Is there that? Is there, you know, any of these X factors that we know could cause this kind of an issue? But you never think of the one-off Z thing that is a sandwich bag. like it just is. There is no way in their like wildest imagination they could have ever thought like a piece of something getting lodged in there causes this much trouble to the car.
This is the Haas F1 team. So like we've talked about them, we've talked about their problems with rich energy. They were doing okay last year in fifth. But you know, now they're down to ninth, which is second to last, which is effectively last because the team behind them is the Williams team who has, registered 1 point all season and usually finishes, one or two laps behind everybody else. So, yeah. You know, they're not doing so good.
But it just gives a suck where they probably could have had a bad race. I mean they could probably could have had a good race if it wasn't for bad luck.
Yeah. Just one unlucky thing after another happening to them this season. So that kind of sucks. They totally could have used those points if Magnussen had finished in eighth. Instead they got nothing.
But you got something. You got a good episode of Sports Odds and Ends. Pray for me because I'm losing this fantasy football game. We will be back next week talking about more sports stories. Hopefully we'll have some esports stuff to talk about, but it's been pretty slow on the esports
competitive front. Gaming.
Nope. The big competitive gaming tournament being the League of Legends World Championships going on right now.
Not a lot of news, not a lot of like interesting news coming from that, but we'll definitely be keeping an eye on those things as well as all other things going on in sports. If you like the show, please make sure you share it with a friend. You could tweet about it. You can tweet us. I am at King Kaz. JVZ is at JVZ. DJM is Call Me DJM. You can also support the show over on Patreon at patreon.com/sportsoddsandends. You can visit us on our website at sportsoddsandends.com, where you can read the stories and all the links that we have to all the show notes that we used here on the show today and previous episodes as well. Thank you for listening. Thank you for joining us. Go watch some sports.